The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports and all things culture. From two U.S. Women's National Team World Cup champions and Olympians, follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go. The final hour of the Rob Brown Show is live, ladies and gentlemen, right here on the Fan Upstate. Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo, and you. Be a part of the radio program this AM if you elect to do so at 844-326-3663. That is the number to the Hub City Spartanburger text line, 844-326-3663. If you'd like to shoot a text to the program, that is also the number to call in and be a part of the radio program, 844-FANFONE. We are 9 days away from the NFL draft. It is NFL Christmas, the day that all of us get to celebrate our shiny new toys. Well, most of us. Some of y'all don't have first-round picks. Carolina does. New Orleans does. There is an interesting discussion, debate, whatever, going on right now. Where do y'all stand on Shedeur Sanders at the NFL level? Because yesterday I was going through mock drafts. I am going to hopefully put a cap on my mock draft tonight. Hopefully I'm going to find the time this evening to sit down. I have done picks 1 through, I think, 17. I got to get through 32 tonight. Hopefully we'll be able to unveil Rob Brown's Mock Draft Volume 1.0 tomorrow.
Just realized that I need the Jeopardy theme.
Just for the conversation about Shedeur?
No, for the waiting.
Oh, it's fair.
For the waiting for your mock.
I got to tell you.
And for other things, but yeah, I think I got to get that.
Here's the problem with this year specifically when it comes to the draft. There's actually a couple of problems with putting a mock draft together. The first problem with putting the mock draft together is that there are about 6 players that opinions about these guys are all over the map. Shedeur Sanders is one of them. Shedeur Sanders, I have seen taken at number 3 by the New York Giants in some mock drafts. I have seen him taken by the Las Vegas Raiders. I have seen him taken number 9 at my New Orleans Saints. And last night I saw a mock from a credible draft guy, not a hot take guy, but a credible draft guy. I saw him taken last night all the way down at number 26 by the LA Rams. And I got to tell you, we found out yesterday the first group of players, and not all of them will announce it, but the first group of players that will be going to the NFL draft. Travis Hunter is on that list. Shedeur Sanders is not, as of right now, Shedeur Sanders is not scheduled to be at the NFL draft next Thursday night when the Tennessee Titans go on the clock with selection number 1. And while on one hand, I would look and I would say, all right, like, I don't really care all that much about this conversation, I kind of do. And I kind of do because I wonder, is Shedeur not going to the draft because he just doesn't want to go to the draft? Or is Shedeur not going to the draft because he doesn't want to get Will Levis? Remember how awkward that was? Will Levis at the draft, and he's just waiting and waiting and waiting, and they eventually move him to the green room because he's like the only player still out on the floor.
Didn't that start with Brady Quinn?
It did happen to Brady Quinn as well. It sure did. And that one was awkward as well. We kept waiting and waiting, and they move him to the green room because his name's not getting called, and we're waiting, and now it's awkward because they still got a camera in his face. And, you know, the girlfriends are crawling all over them trying to comfort them and make them feel better about how, you know, they showed up with glitz and glamour in their eyes. I'm about to be a top 10 NFL draft pick. This is my big night. This is my big time to celebrate. And then now all of a sudden we're at pick 15. We're at pick 16. They're still on the board. Nobody's made the move yet. I wonder if Shador isn't going to the draft next Thursday because he's gotten wind of, you might get Quinn. You might get Levis'd. You might be sitting there when we get to pick 14, 15, 16. You're still on the board because some folks are out on you. Now, I will say this. At 9, as much as I have questions about Shador Sanders, and as much as I think there may be some unnecessary baggage that comes with Shador Sanders, I also recognize the guy's a hell of an athlete. Do I think he's polished? Nah, not really. Do I think he's a plug-and-play guy? Nah, not really. You know who I see him as? Michael Penix Jr. Michael Penix Jr. Elite athlete. Big arm, gonna need some polish, gonna need some development, gonna need some time to learn the NFL game. Because at Colorado, working with, let's just call a spade, a very average skill position set offense around him. Shador Sanders regularly had to go, as the old draft term goes, off platform to make plays happen. And if Colorado was going to be successful, they had to rely on that. And they did rely on that. And it, by and large, worked out for him. But it ain't the same at the NFL level. He is going to have to learn how to do the things that quarterbacks do in order to be successful, in my ever so humble yet frequently correct opinion. The only reason I don't like him to number 9 at the Saints is twofold. Number 1, we got Spencer Rattler on the roster already. And you guys know I'm a big Rat Daddy guy. I'm team Rat Daddy. Let Rat Daddy cook. Give him his time. And obviously, all of this comes from the news that broke earlier this week that Derek Carr has a shoulder injury that may call his availability for the 2025 season into question. Now, there are some rumors going around in New Orleans right now that Derek Carr isn't actually hurt. He just don't want to play for the Saints this year, which, can we be honest, kind of understandable. It's kind of not because you brought in a head coach who's coming off of a year where he offensively coordinated a team to a Lombardi trophy.
Sounds like a fan base rumor.
Oh, 1,000%. 1,000% it is. I don't subscribe to it. I don't buy into it. I don't think that's the case. I think Derek Carr is banged up. But I also think Derek Carr's got one more year in New Orleans, one way or the next. I mean, unless he comes out next year and, you know, takes the Saints to a divisional title, a playoff berth, and then maybe a playoff win or two, then no, I think Derek Carr's got one more year in the franchise. I think it would behoove him to play. I don't think sitting out a year and then trying to find another team the year after that would be the right strategy for Derek Carr. But if Derek Carr can go, like if Derek Carr is going to play, then I'm actually okay with Shador Sanders. Honestly, at number 9. I'd be okay. At number 9, I wouldn't trade up for him. I wouldn't make a move to go get him, but if he falls to 9, he's got enough elite athleticism in him that I would say, I'll take the risk of being able to develop him. I'll take the risk. I'll give him a year to sit behind Derek Carr and hope I get done what the Falcons did with Michael Penix Jr. this year. He got a year, not quite a full year because Kirk Cousins got either hurt or just stank, but Michael Penix Jr. had 8-9 games. 10 games, I think, to figure it out, to learn the game, to get up to speed, whatever. And when they plugged him in, He didn't look like it was baptism by fire. He didn't look like he was overwhelmed by the moment. He looked like he was ready to go. I'd be willing to do that with Shador at number nine if he falls. The problem with doing it at number nine if he falls is if Derek Carr is not available, and then if you don't want to just write this season off as a bust at the draft, then I can't take a quarterback that I'm just going to plug in at number one. That's a spot with the number nine draft pick, with a top nine draft pick. That's a spot I can utilize to get better somewhere else to help out. I would rather roll with Rat Daddy for a season with a number nine, a top 10 draft pick player out there to help him out. I would rather roll him out there, Rat Daddy, with a top 10 offensive player picked on the board and a couple of free agents brought in, and give Rat Daddy his chance to prove that he was indeed the steal of the draft last year. If Derek Carr was healthy, if he was for sure going to play, then I'd be fine with grabbing Shador at number nine. Stinks that Rat Daddy's not going to be the guy. Stinks that my wife is going to be mad at my favorite NFL team for moving on from Rat Daddy. Stinks that she spent her money in this offseason to purchase her first New Orleans Saints jersey, and it is Rat Daddy's, and they would move on from him, but they would. They'd probably carry three quarterbacks. Jake Haener would catch the hook. Shador would go to number three, Rat Daddy to number two, D Carr number one. But if Carr's unavailable, it's Rat Daddy 1, Haener 2, a number 9 pick out there to help him out somewhere. That's got to be the play. And that, to me, says what I need to know about Shador Sanders. He's not plug-and-play ready at number 1. He's not a guy that I am ready to bring in unless I just have an already elite offense out there, an offense that basically, if you can't do it with this offense, you can't do it. And there's probably only a couple of those around the NFL. I think Minnesota's is in that group. Kansas City's is in that group. Detroit maybe is in that group. It's a short list. Those teams, I think, are absolutely the type of teams that are looking to get a Shador Sanders. Hey, man, if you can't do it with these guys, you're just not ready. And we're willing to spend pick number 22, 23, 24 to figure that out, but not number 9. Can't do that. James said, don't you also have Taysom Hill? Taysom Hill had an offseason knee surgery after he tore his ACL last year, and the expectation is that Taysom Hill is going to either be traded or let go because of the amount of money that Sean Payton signed him to on his way out the door, and the concern that at the ancient age of 34 going on to 35, Taysom's not going to be able to come back and be that same guy. Certainly not going to come back. He was never a genuine starting quarterback when he was fully healthy. So, no, they're going to move on there. So, it's either Carr, Rat Daddy, Shador, or it's Shador, Haener, ? At QB3, emergency QB. But that's the move. But again, the point of all that is not to make you guys listen to a New Orleans Saints draft strategy conversation. The reason that I bring all that up is because to me, that tells me, the fact that that is the common thought right now, that tells me everything I need to know about what teams feel about Shador right now. Great athlete. Going to need a lot of polish. Not a guy you can plug in at number one and just have him take over a franchise on week one.
You don't think he's going to go in the first round then?
No, he's absolutely going in the first round. The question mark is, and this is kind of where I started it, is where in the first round? Because if he goes to the, and I'll tell you, honestly, I think the Giants are uniquely positioned to draft Shador Sanders. I do. I think they position themselves to draft Shador.
Was it today or yesterday he's doing private workouts?
Today. In fact, if I recall correctly, it is sometime this morning that Shador is doing a private workout with the Giants. And honestly, I think the Giants would be kind of foolish not to take Shador Sanders, to be honest with you. You have not one, but two veteran quarterbacks on the roster. You have one veteran quarterback that is the definition of polished in Russell Wilson. That guy's so polished, he comes across as a fraud sometimes. And then You have guy who can teach you how to let your personality be part of who you are as a player, but not commandeer it in Jameis Winston. You draft Shador, you make him QB3, and then you just wait. You let him develop, you let him learn how to play QB from Russell, you let him learn how to be a personality-driven QB from Jameis. You give him 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 17 weeks to learn how to be a quarterback in every aspect. And then next year, you trot him out there. And again, Shador has, on at least one occasion, already announced outwardly his contentment with being a Giant. Remember during his, what was it, the Shriners game? He didn't play in the game, but he showed up to do the workouts and all that. He did so in New York Giants cleats. You can't send a clearer message than that. So I think the Giants have uniquely positioned themselves to draft Shador Sanders at number two. But I've also seen a lot of folks, including Evan on WFAN, who have said the Giants are not going to draft Shador Sanders. They feel like they are set at quarterback for at least a couple of years with Russell Wilson. They'd rather use the number three overall pick on Abdul Carter if he falls past Cleveland. So we'll see. I will try to finish out my mock tonight. The problem is I've made 17 picks, and I keep going back and changing picks within the top 17. So I'll try to get it hammered out tonight and debut it tomorrow on the show. I will let you know if I end up being able to do that or not. Take a break back after this. The Rob Brown Show, The Fan Upstate.
The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rob Brown Show continues. It's The Fan Upstate. Rob Brown, the great one, Lonzo, and you. We have talked about coaching a lot, especially since the advent of the portal and of NIL. I have said a number of times, choosing the correct head coach for your program has probably never been, it's always been important, but it's probably never been more important than it is right now. And I have said a couple of times, my favorite thing about the NCAA March Madness basketball tournament this year was just based on the teams that succeeded and failed. I think I was kind of proven right to some degree. I mean, if we look at our championship teams, if we look at our Final Four teams, our Elite Eight teams, the teams that had the most success, I think that what you will notice is that all of them had a coach who is known for a particular culture of sorts. Some like Todd Golden, who are young and in the process of building that culture, but have developed one very rapidly. Some of them like John Calipari, who have had success over the years, but are in a new program and are having to build a new culture around them. Some of them like Kelvin Sampson, the runner-up in this year's tournament, who have been working on building a culture for a very long time at their school and have succeeded in doing so. Culture matters a lot. This is a long clip from Matt Rhule. I am going to play it. I want you guys to really listen to it. Because I got to tell you, Matt Rhule took a lot of crap for his time at Carolina. And while I do think he deserved some of it.
Some of which came from us.
Some of which came from us. A lot of which came from us.
All right, there was a whole lot. There really was.
Yeah, for sure. Because again, I do think this is not letting Matt Rhule off the hook for what happened at Carolina. There was a lot of issues with the ownership he was working for. There were issues with the general manager who was there when he was in charge. I do not put it exclusively on Matt Rhule, but I have said many times over, trying to coach an NFL team with a college coach mentality is going to lead to abject, total and complete failure every single time. When you look at the coaches who did successfully transition from the college ranks to the NHL ranks, guys like Pete Carroll, you will notice they left the college mentality behind, adopted a more professional level mentality. The guys like Spurrier like Saban, like Matt Rhule, who showed up and had this college football mentality at the NFL, they fail. And I do put that on Matt. But I've also said a number of times since Matt Rhule left and went back to Nebraska, I actually think Nebraska's on the way back. I think they're trending up. And part of the reason, maybe the most forward reason, is Matt Rhule. So I'm going to play you this clip. It's got some length to it, but I think it is worth a long listen. Here is Matt Rhule at the Nebraska spring game press conference. I mean, it was, but I think it was also justified. I thought it also was a very good take. I like that take a lot. Matt Rhule, first and foremost, I've figured out what I'm going to do, which is from this point forward, when a player transfers and you guys get upset about them for having the audacity to move to a new setup, I figured out what I need to do courtesy of Matt Rhule. What I need to do is not refer to it as a transfer. I need to refer to it as, oh, that player is taking on a new challenge. That's what I need to do, because verbiage matters. Matt Rhule said, I left Temple for Baylor, and then I left Baylor to go to Carolina. It was a new challenge. I took on a new challenge. I respect that. I mean, that's what you did. But here's what I would say. A coach that can communicate, if he successfully can, a coach that can communicate that message to players has probably got a pretty good chance of convincing players not to just take on a new challenge for the sake of the money or whatever. But you've got to do two things. Number one, you've got to convince them that all of those platitudes are true and correct, A. And B, you've got to live up to them, right? You've got to live up to them. If Matt Rhule develops very few players, if we don't see players getting progressively better year by year at Nebraska, if we don't see Nebraska competing for conference championships, if we don't see Nebraska competing for playoff spots moving forward, then everything Matt Rhule said right there that sounds so wonderful kind of goes by the wayside. Kind of goes away, kind of becomes irrelevant. Listen, I've told y'all before, the outside opinion of Dabo Swinney, but it should not matter to anybody but you, right? That's been the catchphrase the whole time. Yep, the rest of the nation thinks Dabo Swinney's kind of a doofy nerd. But who cares? It's irrelevant. It matters to two groups of people, Dabo's fans, Clemson fans, and Clemson players, both active and future. That's the only two groups of people that Dabo, that the perspective of Dabo Swinney should matter to. That's the only two people. The same is true about Nebraska and Matt Rhule. It does not matter how we feel about all that take. I actually like that take from Matt Rhule. I like that take from Matt Rhule because I think it is a good take. Just because you get a phone call that says the grass is greener doesn't mean it is. I got a phone call once. I was working at a station that was very good to me. I was working at a station that allowed me to do a morning drive show, and for two semesters, 2 days a week, they allowed me to do my morning drive show from the front seat of my Honda Accord sitting in the parking lot of a campus because I had a 9 a.m. class and my show was 7 to 9 a.m. And they said, Rob Brown, here's what we're going to do. They reset the show clock so that instead of the show ending at 9 a.m. on the dot, it ended at 8:56 so that I had 4 minutes to pack up my machine, to pack up my computer, to get inside. I did that for two semesters until I got my degree. Station took care of me. And then one day, I got a phone call from another station that said, Rob Brown, we'd like to make you a host. We'd like to pay you this much money. And I listened to it and I went, That's it. I'm in. I didn't do any other research. I didn't reach out to any other host, any other employees. I didn't do any research. I just said, oh, that's a lot more money. I'm going to take it. And I left. And I went to that news station. And in 3.5 months, I lost my job. I lost my job because they lied to me about some stuff. And I didn't do my research to find that out. Had somebody grabbed me by the collar and said, hey, do some research, man. Ask some people, talk to people, find out about the reputation and the legacy of this station before you just willy-nilly give up a great job for a job that might be great but might suck. Had somebody done that, maybe I don't take that job. Maybe I stay in that old station. Maybe I'm syndicated. Who the hell knows? The point here is I didn't have that in my corner. We should be finding ways to put that mentality that Matt Rhule just dropped into the perspective of players, not crapping on them for wanting better opportunities. Or, sorry, new challenges. Back after this on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. The Rob Brown Show back on your radio, the Fan Upstate. Rob Brown, the great Milonzo, and you. A final segment of the gig. If you'd like to be a part of it, 844-326-3663. That's the number to text the show on the Hub City Spartanburger text line, 844-FANFONE. That is also the number to call the show, to get on the air, to get on the show with the great one and I. Not a political segment. Still have to bring it up. J.D. Vance broke your trophy. Oh, really? All right, well, you know what? It is a preview of what the X is going on.
Oh, no. Here's the thing. You know, if you take everything, then there's just nothing. And that's, I mean, it's only like I got 20 minutes. I'll find something else. But you just keep taking stuff. You're a taker. What's wrong with you?
I'm a taker. I'm a selfish taker. J.D. Vance broke your trophy, Lonzo. The vice president of the United States of America was visiting with the Ohio State Buckeye football program at the White House
yesterday.
Where is he
from?
I believe he is an Ohio guy.
Exactly. So his reasoning, his excuse, was he wanted to make sure that no one else got the trophy after the Ohio State Buckeyes. Good comeback, but he definitely dropped it. I've never held a national championship trophy. It looks like it might be a little slippery. It might have been a little warm outside by the White House, and it's a metal thing. It could have just been a little slippery.
Here's my question. For years and years and years, we have, as sports fans, we have judged our politicians by their physical prowess or lack thereof. We have judged first pitches. We have judged golf swings. We have judged jump shots. We have, for years as sports fans, judged our politicians, presidents, vices, congressmen, etc., by their physical prowess, by their athletic performance, or, in many cases, complete and total lack thereof. Is this the equivalency of a bad, embarrassing first pitch in a baseball game? When George W. Bush took to the field at Yankee Stadium and threw out the first pitch after 9/11, I can say sincerely it was one of, because he tossed an absolute hater down the pipe. Respectable pitch. And did it with a damn bulletproof vest on.
He also had background in baseball. So,
he does.
Yeah.
He does. Still does, as a matter of fact. If I am correct, I believe he is still a partial owner of the Texas Rangers, who are a pretty good ball club this year. He does have a background in baseball. But regardless of his background in baseball, my dude went out there, the first sporting event back after 9/11. George W. Bush strolled to the hill and calmed the nation down by showing that we had, in that moment, when it felt like the world was on fire, we had in that moment a leader who could calmly take the hard ball, walk it to the bump, and deliver a strike in that moment. And I will say, while it was like a funny, goofy bit, and Rob Brown was only a sophomore in high school, even I in that moment, as a sophomore in high school who was in no way, shape, or form anywhere near as interested in the geopolitical politics of the world as I am now, I was like, damn, this feels good. This feels real good. That a boy, W. Good strategery.
Just think of the stress behind for him and an entire nation kind of holding their breath when that happens. Like, come on, dude, you got this.
I threw out a first pitch 2 years ago for the old Spartan Burgers. There were, I don't know, 300 people there that day.
There might have been more. Stadium was, it was hard to, you know.
We'll say, for the sake of the conversation, 500 people in attendance.
I would, you know, listen, I'm going to go with 1,000.
Sure.
You were nervous. You weren't, because it's first pitch and you weren't really as observant. And I was there looking around, taking it in. I'm going to go with 1,000.
Regardless of the total, there was not Yankee Stadium. And as Zoe can attest and just did, your boy was a bundle of nerves.
Yeah, I did legitimately give a pep talk before he went out there. I think it worked. I do because of what happened afterwards. I'm taking
an
some
absolute
credit to it.
Missile yeah. right down the pipe. I was nerves. Now, I was a pitcher growing up. I'd throw a baseball. Hell, I had thrown probably 100 pitches in warm-ups in that week leading up to it. P1 Keegan, dear friend of mine, off and on the air. Keegan was kind enough and served to show up and serve as my catcher. And I threw, I don't know, 60 warm-up pitches on the side of the field.
You got zero credit for it. They said it was me, but that's fine. I mean, you know, that's...
No, Lonzo was my mentality coach.
They said Keegan was the catcher, if you recall. Keegan's brush with celebrity, you're welcome.
Keegan. I'm not going to lie. I don't remember what was said after. I remember the MC giving me a solid strike ring up, and then everything after that was kind of a blur. Because, I was adrenaline. I was hyped. Point here is, I was nervous as hell. This man went out in front of, I don't know, 27,000 people. And oh, by the way, millions and millions of red-blooded Americans around the country who were hurting, who were in pain over what had happened a couple of weeks before that. And this man strolled out there with the confidence of a god and just piped one right down the center. And we needed that. I think it was a moment where via sport, we were all able to collectively go, this feels normal. Let's watch some baseball, right? Like we weren't thinking about terrorists for the first time in 2 weeks. We weren't thinking about, can I get on airplanes anymore? Can I drive up and down the highway anymore? Can I go to big cities anymore? All questions we had asked over the past however long it was from 9/11 till that game. For at least that moment, because W walked out there as the seated president of the United States and looked like a leader and dropped a heater right across the dish. And all of us, I thought, for the first time in a couple of weeks, got to take a collective deep breath. Whew. Baseball, this feels normal. And W, I think to his credit, that became as insignificant as a first pitch should be for someone the stature of a seated president of the United States of America. That first pitch to me might be, I think probably is, the most iconic moment of George W. Bush's time in the Oval Office. So my question is, the other end of the spectrum is in play here as well. We have also absolutely ran politicians and celebrity. We still make fun of 50 Cent's first pitch that ended up seven rows deep in what felt like left field. Still gets crap for that. Is this performance from J.D. Vance, is this going to go down as a defining moment of his vice presidency? The day that his school from his state came to visit and the first thing he did was snap their trophy in half.
I don't think so.
And more importantly, do they fix it or do they leave it?
I think they get another one. I mean, I don't. So if you look at it, it came off the base, and those look real top heavy anyway. As far as the metal, I think that could be fixed. It isn't like it was glass and shattered.
Let's be clear. The trophy is actually just the gold part. The black part is the base.
Yeah.
So technically, he did not break it. He separated the trophy from the base. The problem was that he knocked the whole damn thing on the floor. If that was an American flag, that'd be a big problem.
He was trying to grab it, and he fumbled it. That's a fumble. That's what he did. He fumbled it. So
it was a fumble. So when we have for years put so much emphasis on athletic prowess of our nation's leaders, is this going to be a sticking point for J.D. Vance? Is he going to be taking heat for this? If he does later on down the line, after Donald Trump's second term comes to conclusion and he is out of office, if J.D. Vance is next up to make a run on the GOP ticket, does this become something that he gets some heat for next time around?
It will be used as propaganda for the other side, and they should. I mean, something like that's going to live on for a while, and it will be on signs, it will be on commercials, it will be everywhere.
I mean, kind of by default, right?
Yeah.
Kind of by default. If the last year when the Swamp Rabbits brought the ECHL President's Cup in here for the day, that we had the ECHL trophy sitting in this studio, had I walked over and hit that cup and it ate bleep to the floor and broke in half,
no one would have been surprised.
First off. Second off, no one would have ever let me forget it, right? Like, that would have just become the thing. I don't know. I can't imagine that J.D. Vance's brain in that moment didn't go,
I think it's going to be okay. Let's find out what the X is going on. The first thing that's Xing is Wendy's.
Wendy's is Xing. Wendy's is, before we start the conversation, Wendy's is, to me, Lonzo, the most reliable, the most consistent of the drive-through fast food restaurants. I have never gone to a Wendy's and gotten a burger that I went, this is overcooked, this is undercooked, it's too much. I've never gotten fries I've gotten some McDonald's fries, nowhere near the amount of salt that I want. Sometimes they're so salty, I'm like, oh, I can't, like, these are painful to eat. Wendy's has got to be the most consistent of the drive-through restaurants. No idea why they're trending.
All right, so this has nothing to do with the food. I've had some different kind of situations for myself with the food.
Really?
With the fries especially. This has to do with their X account.
Oh, their social media account has over the years been absolutely fire.
So Katy Perry came back to Earth yesterday,
yep,
and Wendy's immediately X'd send her back. Didn't know that, you know, they had something against Katy Perry, but that was pretty funny. Wendy's
send her
for that.
They straight up tweeted it. Can we send her back? Incredible.
All right. The next thing that's X-ing is Nick Chubb.
Two in a row. No idea why. Nick
Chubb. You haven't seen him squatting 500 pounds.
Oh, is he doing his best Jalen Hurts impression?
Oh, dude, it's
Nick Chubb's a hoss, dude.
Yeah, he is.
Nick Chubb's a hoss right now.
Just looking at all the leg muscles it takes to do that and other stuff, but yeah, and that bar is bending while he's it's
so for those of you that maybe aren't gym bros, that is 6 45-pound plates on each side of the 45-pound bar. I am watching the squat right now. When dude gets it all the way back to the top of the movement, the weight is so heavy that the bar bounces on the ends with 45-pound weight. So that's ridiculous.
It is. What's your squat max?
In high school, I got it to, I think, 320. 325, somewhere in that range. Never touched 4. Wanted to get to 4. Never got to 4. I maxed it like 320 as a teenager.
Squatting hadn't been invented when I was in high school. So, all right, the next thing that's X-ing is Aaron Rodgers.
Lonzo worked out his legs by trying to
There were boulders involved.
Yeah, he tried to work out his legs by getting into tug of war with mules.
No, it was a Sisyphus workout. You just put it and try to push it uphill, but just with your legs.
All right, what's the next one?
Aaron Rodgers.
Aaron Rodgers is X-ing because, he doesn't have a team yet. And there are questions ongoing. Like, for instance, could Aaron Rodgers, who almost was a New Orleans Saints a number of years ago, end up being a New Orleans Saints if Derek Carr is out and they do not want to draft a quarterback at number 9 because, they need more help elsewhere? Is New Orleans now on the table as a potential Aaron Rodgers landing destination?
The reason why he's X-ing is supposedly he had given a proposal to Minnesota, and they didn't like it.
I'm not shocked by that.
You have to look it up. It's pretty involved, and I don't have all the details right now, but yeah. All right, the next...
A one-week monthly mandated Hobbit Hole ayahuasca retreat?
No, it was a one-year deal, though. All right, the next thing that's X-ing is Emma Watson.
Emma Watson. I'm an Emma Watson fan. I think Emma Watson does good stuff. She is X-ing... because it is her 35th birthday.
Yeah, I look like you looked it up.
But I did not look it up.
I mean, you were doing...
Still looking at Nick Chubb squatting 6,000 pounds.
She is actually 35.
Oh, 35 on the
dot.
Yeah,
nice. I mean, you nailed
it. I knew she was a few years younger than me. Because when Harry Potter came out, I was, at the time, only like a handful of years older than... the cast. So I just kind of took a stab at a few years younger than me.
All right. And finally, April 15th is X-ing for some reason. I don't know why.
Is because it is April 15th today. Is that why it's X-ing? Because that's the day that it is?
You don't know the significance of April 15th?
Well, now I'm...
It's tax day.
Oh, that's right. Well, I guess I know... Guess I know what I'm going on.
Hopefully
home to
the IRS is not listening right now.
I've got most of it done. I just gotta finish. You know how you get to the end and then you're like, did I get it? Did I get it right? Did I do everything right?
Yeah, don't be worried about that patch today. You
Dear
need to be worried about your taxes.
I am desperately begging you all to fix the tax system, make it less complicated. I'm begging you. I know you get a bunch of money from tax perk services because they're all lobbyists and they pay you to do what they want you to do, which is to keep it complicated as hell so that we have to give them money to do it for us. But I am begging you, as an American with very little free time, please simplify the system. I'm begging you. Simplify. Make it easier. I want to go home. Lonzo, Robin, to you. See you back here tomorrow to do it all over, but better on the Rob Brown Show and the Fan Upstate later.
The Recap Show is an unfiltered inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.